as an audience, say, it could be anything. It could be just, say, a drama which you are going to watch, or a, you know, a movie which you are going to see. Whenever we go as an audience, like I am, you know, putting myself in your shoes and just trying to imagine that as you must have been, you know, coming to this place, thinking in your mind that I am going at this place to attend a seminar which is entitled this. So I guess you were well informed, this was some time ago, that you all registered and you knew that this is going to be a seminar on this topic. So my question is that, you know, what were the thoughts you had before I go ahead with the presentation? What were the thoughts you had just hearing this topic, joy of stress? Means definitely you would have imagined, thought something, that what this will be in store for us for the whole day. And mind, today's session will be very interactive. So you can ask any questions in between, raise your hands if you want any clarification, and so will I. So whenever I want to know that how the audience is going along with me, I'll be just interrupting and asking some questions to find out whether both of us, we are together on the same track. So, you know, coming back to the same question, that whenever we go, we know in advance that there must be something which you, from your side, have imagined, and then you see, say, like a movie, and then you see that something like that is going to happen in this particular movie, just the title itself of that particular movie. In fact, I'll be taking that one example also, and we'll be seeing what are the feedbacks within our own mind, how we start using our own mind in regards to just encountering a statement like this, beginning with, as you are watching in front of you, just this particular title, Joy of Stress. So definitely, as someone just pointed out, that, you know, it could be a joyful workshop. So you must have maybe thought in advance that it's going to be a joyful workshop. Anything else? Anyone had thought anything else? Yeah. No, it's not. Yeah. Okay, okay. Anything else? Yes. A positive approach to cope up with stress. Yes, very nice. Stress can be converted, transformed into joy. And a very interesting image I found, that I thought that this would be an appropriate image for a title like this, wherein you see all around this guy that he must be bogged down because of the pressure and the stress of his office and work, but then he's trying to get something very positive and very relaxed and kind of a trance, looks like kind of a trance. So definitely, when you look at the image, then along with the title, things become more clear. So let's begin with a little, you know, short icebreaker. Icebreakers are, you know, we come from you know, our own family and office background, and today happens to be Sunday. Is it an off day for all of you, or it's okay? You took off. So on a Sunday morning, maybe would have been late Saturday nights and Sunday morning, and after having some nice hot breakfast. So it requires that, again, to generate everyone together along with us, we want. Yeah. No, but our entire presentation is in English today. Entire presentation is in English. We can have someone translate for you, maybe, because the authorities who wanted us this presentation, they wanted the presentation in English. So herein, I would like to show you something. this thing, what would you decipher upon looking at this? Can you read this? Can you read that? Yes. Mission Impossible. Now, this is a kind of an icebreaker wherein we are trying to make you understand that imagine a situation, a case study wherein you are going for a movie entitled this. I guess there was a movie also entitled this. So now you are going for a movie entitled this. But nothing has, you have not seen the trailer of this movie. You have not seen the poster of this movie. You do not know who the characters are in this movie. You just know. You have the ticket. You know the movie theater, where is it? You know the timings and everything. But somehow, you do not know anything more than just the title. Mission Impossible. So my question now, that let's have a brainstorming session before we begin, that what would you imagine the movie would be all about? Just looking at this one title. What would you imagine? That Mission Impossible, you are going to watch this movie, you do not know what the storyline would be, but definitely just looking at the title you would imagine something. What would you imagine? Can you just write down? Yeah. War story. So, we have one opinion, could be a war story, this particular title could... It could be a mission which is impossible to achieve. Okay. It could be an adventurous movie. Just that. An adventurous movie. Trying to accomplish.
Encounter.
Okay. Encountering. Okay. Encountering an adventurous situation. Anything else? Anyone else? Yeah.
Something possible which is called as impossible.
Making something possible which appears to be impossible. Okay. Yeah. There is nothing impossible if we make proper efforts. It is said, impossible is a word in fool's dictionary. Yeah? There is a saying like that. So nothing is impossible, and it begins with, I am possible. You know? Someone told me like that. Yes, nothing is impossible. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Anything which is really different from whatever we have over here, and the opinions. Anything which is really different. Okay. So, the gist of all these opinions which we just had, you all deciphered that this movie would be, you know, like what kind of character would you, now I ask about the character, like the hero of that particular movie. What kind of character would you now imagine in this particular movie? A dashing person, you know, a good looking, smart looking, a dynamic person, okay. Okay, anything else? A comedian? Would you imagine someone a comedian? No, okay. Yeah. Brilliant and strategic. Wow, that's quite precise. That's quite strategic. Yeah, anything else? A beautiful looking actress. That is something which is very much required, otherwise what is the use? Well, sometimes, you know, to get that mission accomplished seems impossible. Yeah, so beautiful looking actress. Anything else? What would you think of the character of these movies? might be some aliens from the alien world, some sci-fi, Steven Spielberg movie. Okay, some UFOs landing somewhere in some part of the world and, you know, people getting affected and all that. Okay, anything else from this side? A crew, group of people who are wanting to achieve something which might seem impossible. So it's not just one person, teamwork. Okay, so you are imagining that it could be a team of people who are working together. Okay, anything else? Yeah. Oh, a handicap, like a mellow kind of an approach. A handicapped person, maybe, you know, deaf and dumb, something like that. Okay. So, we have some wonderful inputs here, you know, what all of us would have imagined this movie would be. A war story, mission impossible to achieve, encountering adventurous situation. Nothing is impossible if you have your proper approach. Characters would be dashing, brilliant, strategic, beautiful. Aliens, group mission, handicap, beyond reach. Let's see what do we have here on this computer. The movie was about this. Coming again of Jesus in the 21st century. So when you, I guess now many of you have a little disappointed face. Well, definitely no beautiful looking actress here going to be seen. So, do you think that this title matches the image? You think the title matches the image? Mission Impossible in regards to Jesus Christ, that too coming again in the 21st century. Okay, now you have seen the image and, you know, a little caption is showing you that what this movie would have in store. So now I would like to ask that the movie hasn't started. Now in your mind, what you would be thinking that this movie would have in store now? Let's again have some feedback of what you would be thinking. Mission Impossible movie, and it is all about Jesus Christ coming again in the 21st century. Now, what would be it all about, this movie? It's not the conventional, the real life story of Jesus. It's definitely something fiction. It is something which has been imagined or speculated, and someone has come up with a theme like that. What would you think? Yeah.
It could be a peace mission.
Peace mission by Jesus to bring the entire world, the entire humanity, bringing about peace in the entire humanity. Okay, anything else? What would you think of? Okay. It could be after the Third World War, but you mind the image also. Just look at the image carefully, that the image still has. If you see, if you look behind the people look like the modern people, you know, wearing jackets and trousers and all that, not the ones from the Christian era, from Lord Christ's era. So you can see the people behind, and Jesus is carrying what? He is carrying a cross. So he is heading towards, maybe, as a story we all know, for the crucifixion. So okay, so you said that it's after the Third World War, Jesus is carrying the cross. Okay, yes. Beginning of an end of an era. Wow. That's quite eloquent. Okay. Yeah.
Maybe that he was crucified for everyone. Will the same story be repeated for again after?
Yeah. This could also be that it could be that the same story is repeated again, or maybe with a twist. You know, something with a twist. Like somebody was showing me one it was just a made up clip of our Terminator guy, Arnold. Yeah, this Terminator guy has gone back, you know, the Christian era, the Lord Jesus Christ era. And he's like the bodyguard of Jesus. So in that, you know, it is shown that this person is, you know, with all the machine guns and the carbines and, you know, the rocket launchers and all that, and he's protecting Jesus. And Jesus is about to be crucified and he kills all those Pharisees. That how dare you touch him? You know, so the entire trailer is like, it's all just made up. So yes, the question is that, could it happen again? That Jesus again in the 21st century is crucified by the people? Or would it be more brutal? Or would it be more relaxed, peaceful? Yes. Anything else? Would you think of? Yes. So what I'm trying to make all of you people understand is that when we come together, immediately our mind, it starts working. So with this little exercise, what we are trying to seek lessons is that unless our mind has a certain focus, the mind is imagining so many things. Now, if we again go through the list of whatever our minds were thinking, just looking at, you know, some words on the screen, just looking at some image on the screen, the mind was imagining so many things. Now, can you imagine that this just, we had this exercise for some 5-10 minutes. Can you imagine our entire life, wherein our mind is interacting with so many objects, images, situations, people, places? Can you imagine the mind, how it's always on a move? And at one point of time, the same image or the same person, the mind might be imagining something about that person. Just like, I guess when I entered this particular room, some of you might have imagined, he is going to be the speaker. Okay, let's see. So, you know, like, you know, on the poster, you know, we put XIAF, and you are the introduction also. So sometimes, you know, when people, they come, hey, Indian Air Force, you know, Indian Air Force officer. So he must be, you know, dressed up in some uniform and, you know, like 6 foot tall and maybe, you know, having some license of Air Force pilot and all that. And then, this person, you are in Air Force first, anytime. So imagine the mind, you know, how it starts imagining, because we'll be discussing further also on this particular point, that our mind is just a reservoir of so many thoughts and impressions which we carry from our previous experiences. So just like, you know, this title, I on purpose selected this particular title, Mission Impossible, because this was, I guess, one of very famous Hollywood movies. And all of us, we had a certain conception of a title like that. So when we deal with stress, our conceptions with stress is always negative. Just like how we dealt with a title like that, we, you know, jotted down so many different impressions and imaginations which we had. Similarly, whenever this word stress we encounter, our ears and our thoughts, our consciousness encounters this word stress, immediately there is a negative impression. And therefore, I really wanted to start off with a title like that, that our title should be that we are dealing with stress not from a negative point of view. We are dealing with this emotion. Mind, my dear friends, that any emotion within us, there is always the better half of that. There is always the flip side. And what happens is when we do not know what is the better side of that and we always focus on the dark side, So our mind is just a conglomeration of all those negative images of that particular emotion. So therefore, when we are talking about a seminar on joy of stress, this is what we'll be having in store for us, managing stress with a positive outlook. And therefore, just to make you aware of our journey for this day, I call it a journey which we have embarked upon. So these are all things which are in store for us. Icebreakers, introduction, PowerPoint presentation, games, multimedia shows, group tasks, lunch also in between, I have not mentioned that. Interactive sessions, questions and answers, skits, dramas, mind relaxation exercise, some little yoga, mantra meditation, and conclusion. Don't worry, it's all going to be today itself. And we are going to cover all these wonderful. This is, I just wanted to make sure that you know that it's like when we take upon a journey, you take a map that, you know, this is the place from where start of my journey and this is the destination and what are the stations in between. So this journey is something like that wherein we have enlisted the number of stations we are going to come in between and you can make a note of all that. And as we go ahead. So coming back to where we started off. Again, I'd like to ask you that looking at this image now, what can you decipher? What do you deduce from this particular image? What do you understand? What's happening here? There is a human being and there is a glass in front of him. And this human being, this gentleman is looking at something, looking at this glass. So, what would you think? What is happening? The glass is half full. Okay, the man is looking at a half full glass. Okay, anything else?
Half filled in glass, not half full.
Okay, a little twist to the same opinion. A half filled in glass we have in front of us, a man looking at that. Anything else? Maybe the gentleman is looking at half empty glass. Anything else? Maybe he's thinking how to maybe put something else. Like, you know, some scientists, they really wanted to find out that, you know, which liquor has how much power of intoxication. So, they first took some rum. All of you are aware? Rum? Huh? I guess. So, they first took some, one peg of raw. They call it raw. You know, neat and all that. Those are the jargons they use. So, they took and they added some water to it and, you know, administered that to a person. And that person took that, you know, half rum, half water, and he drank. And what happened? He was high. So, he was in high spirits. And then, then the next week, on that same person, they tried out with half whiskey, half water. And again, they administered it to the same person the next week. And again, he was high. Then they took, you know, some wine and, you know, gin and I don't know, what else? Vodka and so many different categories and different species of that liquor. So they took all of that, you know, always added with some kind of water, half of that, and then administered that. And then after some 8 weeks of this experimentation of various kinds of liquors mixed with water, then they wrote an article, their research work was over. And in that, the conclusion was, no matter what you add with water, water is always intoxicant. So looking at this, you know, it might be you know, so many things happening in this person's mind. So therefore, again, we touch upon this particular theme that life is also like this glass. It depends how we look at it. Whether we look at our life as something which is stressful, going to put me in some kind of stress, or whether I am looking at my life, something which is very enjoyable and I can draw out even some good lessons from something like this. Like, you know, in our childhood, we had this one Zen story. That there was one village where there was one famous old lady of that village who would be always weeping. All through the year, she would be always weeping. And her name, she got a name after that. Her name was the Weeping Hand. That was the name she got. So one saint visited this village, and the saint came to know about this Weeping Hand. So he really wanted to meet with this old lady. And then he asked that, why you are always weeping? Everyone is just talking about you. Why you are always weeping in your life? And she said, see, I have two sons. The elder one, he has a business of sunglasses. You know, goggles they call it. Sunglasses. So he has a business of selling them. And my younger one, he has a business of selling umbrellas. So whenever it is sunny, and I think of my younger son, I'm thinking that it's sunny, and my younger son, he sells umbrellas. Who is going to come and buy umbrellas on this sunny day? So I weep. And when it is cloudy, then I think of my elder one. And he has the business of selling sunglasses. So it's cloudy, who is going to come and buy sunglasses? So I'm weeping always. So the saint said, okay, I have a simple solution for you. A simple solution. And the saint gave a simple solution to this old lady, and from there on, she stopped weeping in her life. Simple solution. He said that whenever it is cloudy, you just think of your younger son who has a business of selling umbrellas and vice versa. You have to just switch your thought process. You think about your sons, but only time it well. If you time it well, you will be out of this habit of always weeping. So similarly in our life is also something like that. We look at our life many times from so much of negativity is within our mind. So therefore, we have to be very careful how we look at our life. That's how we will look at different aspects of our life which is all made up of. So similarly, let's now discuss how to look at stress, since that is what is the topic of our discussion for the whole day. So how to look at stress. Now mind, it's not that we won't be going into the ill effects of stress which people face. So you might think that is it all going to be the goody-goody talk today, or is it going to be like a post-mortem of this particular emotion and, you know, everything taken out and shown that, yeah, this is the symptom of stress and all that. Definitely. Because, you know, it's like a doctor. It's like a doctor who is examining a patient. When a doctor examines a patient, what happens? Is it all just nice goody talks going on? The patient and the doctor, how are you? Fine. Yeah, good health. Yeah, smiling and everyone, both of them leave like that. Sometimes you go to the hospital or the clinic, you know, you'll find screams, moaning, and, you know, blood sometimes here and there, and sometimes you smell medicines and all these, you know, these kind of things. Why? So a doctor, when he's examining a patient, he's really looking for what? He's looking for the disease. He's examining with his stethoscope, the x-ray, so many of his equipment. He's looking for the disease. Now, would you call, hey, this person, he is a pessimist, and he is only looking for disease and, you know, negativities in someone. No, you should look for, no, my heart is okay, why you are looking into my liver? So, would you call a doctor a pessimist? Would you call the doctor a pessimist? In fact, the definition of one who is an optimist is, an optimist is that person who knows very well everything about the pessimistic things. He knows very well about the pessimistic, just like a doctor. In order to administer the medicine, he has to locate, pinpoint the disease. In fact, show graphically the x-ray report. This is where your lungs, see, sometimes you can't even see the lung, it's a big patch. And then, you know, then he gives the medicine. So similarly, when we are looking at stress, we are definitely pinpointing where the disease is lying within us. But then, if we just leave out there, if the patient goes to the doctor and shows himself and the doctor pinpoints the disease, you know, your lungs are totally charred. And then the doctor says, okay, you can go home. Hey, but give me the medicine, man. So, the prescription is the most important after that. So, therefore, stress also, how we look at it. Beginning with, this guy looks really relaxed and peaceful. So, let's take him as a person who has, say, some positive or in the technical term, it's called the EU stress. So, he has some positive stress in his life. Now, let me ask you some questions that, what would you think, anything, which would act as a positive stressful situation in your life? That it's stressful situation, but it's in the positive sense. Some examples of your day-to-day life. I can start off with one, so that, you know, you can think of in the meantime. Exam. For a student, the stress of appearing for the exam. Now, do you think it's positive or negative stress? Stress of exam. Is it positive or negative? How is it positive? Yes. Because of that stress, he's going to gain knowledge. Imagine if the university announces that from this year on, there will be no exams. No stress. No stress. Nobody will even come to college. And nobody will, you know, even open those books. And nobody will then get educated. So sometimes this is induced, this stress is induced, but with a positive thing in mind. Think of something else. What other examples? Yeah. You earn money and you invest, and it's a stressful situation that whether you will get back. Whether you will get back the right kind of remuneration of your investment, and sometimes you may not. Gambling, something like that.
First of all, you earn money.
Okay.
Okay. And then you.
So first of all, you. Okay. So investment is positive stress. Anything else? Marriage. You think? It's a positive stress. Huh? You do not know who is going to come in your life, whether, you know, he'll be a normal human being, abnormal human being, extraordinary human being, extra extra, or just ordinary, or below. So sometimes, you know, it's like, you know, one child, he was asked. This is a classroom atmosphere, and the child was asked by the professor. So tell me, what is the difference between discovery and invention? So the child said, my father discovered my mother and both invented me. So that was his example about discovery and invention. So yes, marriage sometimes, many times, it appears, you know, to be a stressful situation, and, you know, there are those butterflies flying before the marriage. Huh? Before the marriage, the butterflies, they fly. And then both of them, they start flying after the marriage. So marriage could be an example of a stressful situation. Anything else? Well, till now I am avoiding that, so, you know, not induced myself in that stress.
Labor pain before the delivery.
Labor pain before the delivery. Wow. I thought it should be coming from this side. Okay. Okay, so even the husbands, they have stress, you know. The fathers, they also undergo stress. Yeah. Major operations, it's something positive. Yeah. Anything else? Now, as against the positive stress, there are two categories of that. One is there are some unavoidable situations or some situations which are utterly necessary in which we have to put ourselves in stress. So like exams or, you know, as he said, say labor pain and so many other examples we had, marriage and all that. But now, there are certain situations which are not required, but we see that the kind of lifestyle we live in, those kind of situations wherein we create stress for us, which is not necessary to be created, and that is called self-induced stress. Should I start with an example? Cricket match. India-Pakistan. Last over. 6 balls, 5 runs. You know, they call that nail biting edge of the seat. You know. 4 balls, 2 runs. 3 balls, 1 run. And, you know, sometimes people, they go in so much of stress, sometimes there is an attack. And people, you know, people have gone so crazy with this particular game nowadays, especially in this country, that, you know, I was reading one article, this was the Week magazine, they had an article on this, the cricket fever in India. And there were like real examples of people who were going mad, some World Cup was going on, and there was an article that there was one guy in Mumbai. He would be watching the cricket match with the full cricket gear on. The helmet, you know, the pad, the gloves and, you know, like that, sitting in front of the TV. And he was interviewed. Okay, you're just watching. Why you are dressed up like, in case they need me. So, people, you know, and there was some recent matches at the Wankhede in Bombay, and there were reports that people, they were standing in queue to get into the stadium, everyone having tickets, their valid bona fide ticket holders, they were standing in the queue for more than 8 hours outside. Real, you know, even some yogi from Satyagraha would not be performing such tapasya. You know, standing for 8 hours, scorching sun, just to get into. And over there, they found that nobody would drink any soft drinks. The soft drinks company, they were having big loss. They thought that such a huge crowd and they would be making a big sales over there. You know why? Because they were all who were sitting, they were thinking, if we would drink anything, we'll have to go out to pass. And if we go out to pass, we'll lose our seat. Losing our feet, we can't, you know, have darshan of what wonderful our Mahajans are there playing for us. For that reason, they would perform upvas for the whole day. Nirjala. Without taking any gel. Nirjala for the... So, this is an example of self-induced stress. Any other example of self-induced stress? Sorry? Life? Oh, lifestyle we acquire. Like, some specific examples, like I guess, cricket is like something, you know, they come together.
Watching of TV itself.
Watching of TV, some suspense movie. Okay. Huh? Saas bhi kabhi bahu thi. Aur bahu bhi phir saas hogi. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One feels like watching particular serial, another feels like watching news, someone feels like watching this thing. And when I feel like watching news, someone else is on the screen looking at
cartoon. Okay, okay. The child wants the cartoon show.
Then I'm
The child wants the cartoon show, the father wants
news,
the mother wants Sas Bahu, you know, and then the teenager, grown up one comes and he wants, hey, MTV, come on, what's this all cartoon and all this nonsense, man. Come on, switch it off, there should be some passion, rock, jazz, all this, okay, so everyone is stressed out, yeah, okay. Oh, we self-induce that to us? Unforeseen expenses that I don't know what model cell phone is going to come about, and definitely going to be expensive, and I will definitely would want to have that. So then I induce, you know, some stress on myself. Or you buy something very expensive. Like you buy the latest whatever the car, you know. And, you know, your life was much more peaceful before. And after having that, now you have to register it. And there is an insurance you have to do. And, then you realize, then you come to know, my God, I never realized that there is a petrol tank also inside. Because that is not seen. It's all inside, you know. What you see is the beautiful form of the car. And then someone says, there is a tank also below, behind. And you have to fill that. And you know the rate? What is the rate? And then when you go to the petrol station, then you come to know for the first time, what are the rates? And before that, you have to go to a motor training school. And then you have to learn that driving. And there is a stress of learning that driving and, you know, and then getting the license. There is a bigger stress in India to get a license. Traffic jam, accidents. And once, you know, anyone just bumps into, you know, kisses your car from behind, then you come to know that better I had my cycle or whatever was better, you know. So this is again, you know, the self-induced stress we are talking about. Over here,
fear of death.
Fear of death. Well, of course, that's every species has to undergo that kind of stress. Now, the other guy looks really disturbed, huh? He is really waiting what we have in store for him. This person steaming out. So, this is the negative and it is called distress. So, we are dealing with stress of two kinds or maybe stress of three kinds. The self-induced one, which is not required. Then we have the positive, which might be unavoidable, but we can turn it into something positive. And then of course, any kind of stress can make us into a distressful person, which is the negative stress which we are talking about. And of course, we'll have loads of examples in terms of the negative one. Now, in front of you, we have a term. This is called the flight or fight response. Now, it's a very interesting term, and this is stemming from our ancient Vedic scripture, say Bhagavad Gita. Can anyone guess that how Bhagavad Gita is just nothing but a term which this particular is in front of you? Flight or fight response? You can guess? How Bhagavad Gita is related to this term? How?
Arjuna on the Yuddha Bhumi.
Yes, he wanted to fly. He wanted to do the flight response. Arjuna, after looking at his own kinsmen, he wanted to do the flight response. But Krishna, he wanted him to fight. He wanted him to take up the fight response. So now, herein, we have an example of a caveman. Looks like a modern kind of one, but I just got this one image. So we have a caveman, and the situation is that what according to you would be the requirements of a caveman? You know, day-to-day requirements of a caveman. Food, shelter, clothes, roti, kapda, makan. Like in Bombay, I saw one billboard. You know, it said roti, kapda, shadi or makan. You know, they added something in between. So, all these things. So imagine a situation that this caveman, he sets out in the morning with his weapons to hunt for an animal. So he comes down from a hill where his cave is. He comes down, and as he's just round the corner about to go into the forest, he sees that a wild boar comes charging at him. So he has only few seconds to respond now. Few seconds to respond. And he has two choices. Fight or flight. He has two choices. To fight it out or whether to fly off. And also in the fight response, he has to do it well. If he does it well, the fight response, he will have his breakfast, lunch and dinner for a couple of days. Or else he'll become for that wild boar. So here is a situation wherein he becomes stressed out. And over here, when he becomes stressed out, there are certain physical things, physical symptoms which are seen in this person. The first thing is his blood pressure rises. When he encounters that particular situation, his blood pressure rises. This is the first symptom seen in him. The second is his muscles get tensed up. This is another symptom of someone who is stressed out. And the third symptom, the acid in the stomach pours out. This is the third symptom of a person who is stressed out. Now, in regards to this caveman. So now my question is that these symptoms seen in this caveman, as he is just few inches away from this wild boar, what would you think? These are positive symptoms or negative symptoms? These three symptoms in this caveman, is it positive or negative? Positive, who said? Someone said positive. How? He wants to save the boar or himself?
Himself.
He wants to save himself. So how are these symptoms positive then? What will he do? Fly away?
No, he's fighting for his existence.
No, I'm just asking, these three symptoms which we see in front of us, do you consider that these symptoms are positive in that person? Negative. Anyone of the other opinion? Okay. It's positive. It's not negative. Because in order to fight out with that wild boar, the blood pressure has to rise. Because for the fight response, when the blood pressure rises, the reflex action is quick. So, because of the rising of the blood pressure, the reflex action will be so quick that he can then attack that boar more efficiently because of the rising of the blood pressure, and his reflex action will become more agile. The second one, when the muscles get tensed up, they get more strength. You know, like people, they work out in the gym. When they work out in the gym, you know, they lift some weights and muscles becomes? You feel some strength. Sometimes, you know, people right coming out from the gym, they feel as if, you know, they are the next. Yeah, and they can really, anyone coming in front, you know, even a building, they'll punch and break that building. But then, you know, after a few hours, everything gets loosened, all that enthusiasm is gone. So when the muscles get tensed up, a person gets strength through those tensed up muscles to make the fight response. And the last one also is positive, that because of this stressful situation, when the acid started pouring out, what that acid did in the stomach, the undigested food, it digested. And then it was converted into valuable energy, which this caveman can use in order for its attack and the fight response. So herein we can see that a stressful situation, he is confronted, encountered by this wild boar, and he is perceiving these physical symptoms, which are totally stressful symptoms, as all of you had agreed that is a negative. But again, he can be joyful, since we are discussing about the joy of stress. He can be joyful using those negative physical symptoms in that stressful situation by giving into the fight response and coming out of that particular situation. So here is one example of this. And same with Arjun. In Bhagavad Gita, if you see, Arjun who wanted to fly away, and he was thinking that this will be, you know, cool and relaxed, that I'll be away from this battlefield and I won't be in this stressful situation. But the entire Bhagavad Gita was spoken to Arjun by Krishna to induce the stress. In fact, that was the original stress management seminar, Bhagavad Gita. It's nothing but a stress management seminar wherein Krishna is trying to induce positive stress in Arjun, get up and fight, but for the right cause, in the right way, in the right consciousness. That is very important to know. So therefore, any situation, it can be turned into positive if we have the right approach. Now another beautiful example in regards to stress, it is compared to salt. And this is a very interesting example, that stress in our life is compared to salt, what we use in our life. Now, just a piece of information for you, that you know the word salary, all of you get? Okay, the word salary, the origin of the word salary, you know it's from salt. It was in ancient Rome. In ancient Rome, the soldiers, they were given salt instead of, you know, the payment, instead of, you know, the currency and all those denominations. They were given salt for their, you know, working as a remuneration. So, in Latin, it is called sal. So, it is called sal, and from there on, the word, every month they would get that much of salt, which they would use, you know, for their cooking and eating and all that, for whatever work they would do. So, then that was called as salarium. And, you know, therefore, in Hindi also, you know, we say, anyone who is working for someone, are namak harami mat karna, you know, namak halal bano, namak haram mat bano, you know, that namak comes, salt comes. So, the word salary is stemming from the word salt, you know, give the worth of its salt, they also say in English. So, over here of course, when we are discussing stress with salt, what we understand is that, say when we are eating something, like you ate, what was the breakfast today? Pohe. It has salt in it. It has? Okay. So, when you are eating something salty, you know, some savory, you are eating something salty, or Nasik is famous for misal, or namkeen, misal pav and all that. It's again salty items. So when you are eating your poha or misal pav, and if there is less salt, what will be the discussion on the table? Namak ka hai, namak, namak, namak kam hai. You know, that was the discussion. And let's take the other side. If there is more salt, then what is the discussion? Are kitna namak dala. So in both cases, if the salt is less or if the salt is excessive, the discussion is on salt. But if the salt is the right amount, then nobody while eating, like when you are eating your poha, what are you discussing? Kya namak hai? You are discussing about the poha, you are discussing about that particular prep. So stress in our life is also like that. It should be the right amount, it's required. It's like the flavoring in any particular dish. It has to be the right amount. If it is less, people keep talking about it. Stress, stress, stress. I don't have enough stress, you know. No cricket match happening, no stress, you know. No marriage taking place, no stress in my life. Too free life, man, no stress at all. So then, if it is less, we keep talking about that. And what to speak if it is more, then what to speak of the discussions going on then. So it is like salt. It has to be the right amount when it takes its position the right way. Then we glorify the particular preparation. So if our life is like a nicely made dish, preparation, you know, some food stuff, nicely made food stuff. So stress, if it's the right amount, we will focus on the life. But if it's not the right amount, like the salt, we'll be simply focusing on less more, less more, less more, like that. So herein again we see that how we are dealing with the stress in a positive way, like how we deal with salt. Now, in our life we see as this guy is trying to, you know, balance himself. We also, we find a need in our life to keep balancing our life. And therefore, human form of life specifically is nothing but art of balancing. Let me ask you some questions. That what are certain features, aspects in our life wherein we strike a balance every day? Every day we strike a balance in so many activities which we do. Let's hear from all of you. Balanced diet. How do you do that? You eat appropriate amount at appropriate time. No, I'm talking about that opposites. When you are balancing, there has to be opposites. So, okay, let's take eating. You know, what is the opposite of that? Evacuating. A good word. So, eating and evacuating. Do you think you balance that? You have to balance. If one thing is not properly balanced, specifically the latter one is not properly balanced, if the evacuating is not done, you will have problem in your eating. And if the eating is not properly done, the evacuating will have problem. So which means, there has to be a proper balance in one's eating, in one's evacuating. What else? Sleep and wakefulness. So, if somebody says that to sleep is good for health, so I'll keep sleeping. Therefore, it is said that when someone sleeps more, he becomes lazy. If he sleeps less, he becomes crazy. So sleep has to be, sleep and wakefulness, there has to be a balance which one has to strike in both. What else? Earning and spending. Many times people go into a stressful life because they can't strike a balance. That they want to spend so much and there is not enough from that side, the earning side. Now, I'll tell you some cases wherein people have so much from this side and they are still stressful because they do not know how to spend. There are people, billionaires, who are sick of their money. In US, there are billionaires who do not know how to spend those dollars which they have earned so much. So you know what they do? They, another self-induced thing, they dress up like beggars. They dress up like beggars and go out on the street experiencing what begging is all about. And you know, there are like there are consultancies who, you know, they give them counseling that which area you should go for begging. you know. And then there will be billionaires who bet on each other. देखते हैं तू कितना भीख मांगता मैं कितना भीख मांगता हूँ दोनों भीख मांगने जाते हैं ए देख मेरे को $10 मिला लाइक दैट एंड दे बेट ऑन मिलियंस ऑफ डॉलर्स दैट इफ इन केस आई विन ओवर यू आई विल गेट यू नो यू विल हैव टू पे मी $10 million लाइक दैट सो पीपल आर सिक ऑफ दैट सो लेट्स टेक दिस वन पॉइंट अर्निंग एंड स्पेंडिंग एंड इट्स अ वेरी वेरी इंपॉर्टेंट बैलेंस विच यू हैव टू स्ट्राइक in the day-to-day life which we are living. Anything else? Love and hatred. We require to hate. Sometimes we require to hate. It comes and we have to strike a balance. Okay, yeah. Yes, managing time between family and business. Like if the father thinks, in order to maintain my family, I have to go work outside. So he thinks that this is the only thing by which I can take care of my family. So he sits in the office all 24 hours. And if someone asks, hey, your family? I'm doing everything for family. So 24 hours, hey, but your family, they need you there. Acha? Then he sits in at home 24 hours. So I have to strike balance between work life and family life. Nowadays they say, you know, they define work life. Nowadays the work life has been defined that it's a place where a frustrated man relaxes after a tiring home life. That's his office nowadays. Yeah. So over here, let's take, what do we have here? Study, work, play, party, social obligations, relationship. Now, we try to strike balance in these aspects many times. That when it comes to study, work, play, party, obligations and relationship, somehow we are trying to maneuver and make sure that we are satisfying all these different aspects in our life. And therefore, if you ask a student, he's focusing on his studies. Why? Because from there, he wants to get rid of that and then get hold of something more. Work after whatever he has studied. And then, whatever earnings he has done through that work, then he needs to have some recreation. And of course, he needs to have a society around, and then of course, relationships, which all boils down to what? It boils down to these three things, which we are trying to look for in our life. We are trying to look for enjoyment, we are trying to look for satisfaction, we are trying to look for happiness. Some of you might be wondering, what is the difference between enjoyment and happiness? Enjoyment is something very transient, temporary, immediate, something, you know, immediate, you know, you pop a rasgulla, you get some enjoyment. But happiness is more long lasting. That is the difference between enjoyment and happiness. And unless there is satisfaction in between, enjoyment and happiness, in fact, there cannot be happiness coming about if the satisfaction part is not coming in. Like there was one king, and this king, he asked a saint. He said that, tell me in just one word, if you are so eloquent, if you are so wise, tell me in one word, what is the definition of happiness? And the saint said, happiness in one word, butterfly. He said, he just uttered butterfly. Now, the king was wondering, what happiness has to do with butterfly? And then the saint left, because that was what he was supposed to do in one word. He left. And the king was wondering, happiness, butterfly, happiness, butterfly. Many months passed. Now the king was sitting in his royal gardens and he happened to spot a butterfly. He happened to spot a butterfly, so he was reminded that some months ago that saint had told me, happiness is like butterfly. Let me try to check out in this butterfly if I can figure out what happiness if it's like butterfly. So he goes closer to the butterfly. As he goes closer to the butterfly, nature of the butterfly? Flies. That's the name also. Flies. So then the king became a little more desperate. How dare this butterfly is, you know, flying away. The king goes closer. The butterfly keeps flying. The king goes closer. The butterfly keeps flying. As the butterfly keeps flying, the king becomes so desperate, he removes his sword. How dare this butterfly not stopping? I am the king. You are supposed to be under me. Stop here. And all the soldiers and the ministers looking at the king. Kya ho gaya? Raja, Maharaja ko kya ho gaya? And the king destroyed the entire royal garden, and for so many hours he was just running after this butterfly. And the butterfly kept on, you know, moving from branch to branch, flower to flower. The king was not able to. And that point of time, the king became so exasperated and was puffing and panting, not able to just catch a silly butterfly. The king sat down in total desperation. And that was the time when the butterfly flew and alighted on his shoulder. And the king realized, what that saint had told months ago, happiness is like this butterfly. He understood. When you chase after it, it's like this butterfly. Always few inches away from you. You always feel that, yes, I can just have that right there. It's just right there. I can see that. It's just within my reach. Huh? Always happiness is felt like that. And then you take your few steps to have it. And then you find it's few steps more ahead of you. And many times when you do not expect anything, and when you sit down with no expectations, you find that happiness sometimes alights on you, like that butterfly. So, when we are in our life trying to strike balance between all these different aspects of our life, we are actually looking for these three things to boil down to. We are looking for enjoyment, satisfaction and happiness. But the question is, are we getting real enjoyment? Are we getting real satisfaction? Are we getting real happiness? Or it's just, you know, like I was reading an article, and it was speaking about this menthol. You know, in some foodstuff they put menthol. I think paan and all that also they put. And mukhwas, you know, they put menthol. So, it was speaking about menthol. That what is menthol? How many of you have tried menthol in your life? You know, you had menthol. How many of you? You had? You get a cooling effect in your mouth. When you have menthol, you get a cooling effect. You know how you get a cooling effect? There is nothing cooling in menthol. There is no cooling element in menthol to cool you. What happens is that when the menthol is placed within your mouth, it starts creating vapors, and that vaporization, it starts to evaporate the heat in your mouth. So the heat in your mouth, it's getting evaporated, and then you feel something cool. So it's nothing but, for that time being, your mouth is having some absence of heat. And it appears as if it's cooling. That is happiness. Absence of misery. So, happiness is defined, nowadays especially, it is defined as the interim period between two miseries. One which I have already experienced in the past, one that is going to be coming in the future, and in between, nothing is happening. Happy. How are you? Fine, thank you, no problem. Why I am happy? Because no problem. Up until now. You know, no mishaps taking place, no catastrophe, no disease, nothing. So that is something which is termed as happiness, as we define. So therefore, we need to really go beyond that particular definition of happiness and try to look for that, am I really positively looking for something, or am I someone like this guy, instead of happiness, surrounded by stress. Am I just surrounded by stress? It is said, public health enemy number one, and it is a gift to mankind, 20th century's last epidemic, carried forward for us as a free gift for us. What? Stress. Now, as you see this person who is surrounded by so many, you know, the tax returns and all these kind of forms and applications and pieces of paper. In fact, our life becomes nothing but pieces of paper. Talking to some students, I am reminded of this, that life is nothing but that. You know, when we are in school, college, we are dealing with what? We want that one piece of paper. What is that? The certificate. Yeah? The certificate. We want that certificate. What is it? Piece of paper. We want that one piece of paper. And for that one piece of paper, we go through so many pieces of paper in the form of books. And those books are not, you know, like magazines, you know, thin, stardust, you know, thick. They are thick books, so many papers. So for that one piece of paper, the student has to go through so many pieces of paper. And what he has to do after going through so many pieces of paper, he has to reproduce in on another piece of paper. What is that? His answer sheet, exam. And that is, he has to reproduce because there is another piece of paper which will decide, you know, the question paper. That question paper is another piece of paper. So, what he has gone through, all the pieces of paper throughout the year, is tested by this one piece of paper, and how he will react to that one piece of paper on this piece of paper will decide whether he will get that piece of paper. And when he gets that piece of paper, we'll decide how many pieces of paper he'll get in future. So it's nothing but story of pieces of paper. So for that, sometimes, many times we find ourselves into a total stressful situation, surrounded by just stress, or maybe in the form of pieces of paper again. So herein we have, say, the definition. Let's begin with the definition. How would we technically, etymologically define stress in our life? Now, the dictionary meaning, it says, what is it? State of mental or emotional strain or tension resulting from adverse or very demanding circumstance. A pathological human response to psychological, social, occupational or environmental pressures. Looks like quite specific. And we have an interesting example to define it in a more relative and practical sense. This example says, stress is when one is under stress, one is like a car in the neutral gear with the accelerator on and trying to exert internally. How many of you drive? You must know that what is the situation, you know, when you're, you know, putting the accelerator when the car is in the neutral gear, or, you know, the clutch is on and, you know, you are just exerting internally. That is something which happens in someone's life when he is stressed out. So herein we are talking about pinpointing, defining the disease which is engulfing so many of us. At this point of time, I would like to ask you, like to have some break, or we have a coffee break for all of you if you like, for some time? Okay, so there will be in just 5-10 minutes we'll have the coffee break, and we'll go with few more slides. And then we'll resume back, and then of course we'll decide when we'll be having the lunch. Okay, so when we are talking about the definition of stress, as a doctor might define a disease, when we have defined the particular disease or when we have defined stress, which is something we do not have to know it in black and white now. Like, you know, when a student goes to study a certain subject, when he goes to study a certain subject, it is more theory in the beginning. And he doesn't realize what is the practical aspect of, you know, the theory of relativity, Albert Einstein. And sometimes he cannot relate with the practicality of whatever theories he is studying in his education. But when we are talking about this, I think over here the opposite is taking place, that we have already realized the practical and now we are looking at the theory. But when we were in school, college, we were first going through the theories and then, you know, something practical we could do later on after studying the theories. You know, in science they have the practicals. You go into the lab, first in the classroom, the science teacher teaches you that this is the chemical equation and these are the chemicals you have to mix and this is the experiment which you have to do, and you have to make a journal. You have to make that journal and then you have to go into the lab and do the practical. But over here, I guess all of us, we've already been in the lab of stress, and all the practical different equations of stress we have undergone. But over here, why we are pinpointing with certain definitions and terms so that we can go systematically in approaching this particular problem. So let's begin with the causes of stress. There could be many causes of stress, but since all of us who may have been living a certain kind of lifestyle in India, let's begin with what could be in our case causes of stress. First is stress which is caused on a physical level. So sometimes it's just on a physical level, but many times it goes from physical to mental, and then from mental we sometimes experience around us, the environment also can induce us in a kind of stress. Environmental, of course, familial. Living in a family and having relationships, trying to maintain those relationships, what to speak of trying to enhance those relationships. Nowadays, even just to maintain the relationship takes a lot of, you know, sweat and blood. So that's familial and of course work related. So herein we have these five different causes in front of us which induces us into a certain kind of stress. And every single cause has its own variety and flavor of the stress which is involved in it. You know, the physical, the mental, the environmental, the familial, the work related, each has its own flavor. Like a person might have headache. So headache is not just of one kind. There are so many different kinds of headache. A person, you know, might have just half of his side, you know, paining. A person might have throbbing headache. You know, there is a term called throbbing headache. Then there is a migraine attack. There are different kinds of just headaches. So when we are talking about stress, it's not just, you know, one silly innocent thing. You know, that everyone is just having the same kind of thing and we'll deal with it. No, it is something state specific, as they say. It is something which is not objective. It is very much subjective. So what we have to do, definitely we are discussing in a general pattern here. I'm not dealing case to case over here, but we are just taking the general case studies. And then what you all have to do, or I include myself, what we all have to do is we have to translate that in my life, Whether it is work-related more, whether it is family more, whether it is environmental, mental or physical more, which is happening. So as we go ahead in discussing, all of you, you have to just look into your own personal life and we will see, we will get some inputs from you and you can be really frank, even if your family is over here, still be a little more frank and open up that in your case, which particular stress is really overpowering the other stresses in your life? Definitely, every aspect will have some stress involved in your life, but there will be one which will be, you know, always having its crowning glory in your life, the shining one, you know. So therefore, we'll go beginning with the first one on a physical level. Now, this is something which goes more on the biological sense. We are talking about more on the biological sense. Now in this, I would like to begin with a certain small little exercise. Huh? And I want someone, could you come? Venus? Yeah. Okay. So here is a pen for you. Yes, this one. Yeah, I have the pen for you. You are a right hander.
Yeah.
Take it in your left hand. Now you have to write with your left hand a certain statement. I love my country. Okay, wait a minute. Just a minute. Okay. So what we will do is, as Venus is trying to write the statement, we will time it. Huh? We will time it. Anything? You want to say something? Okay. So, okay, we'll time it. Your time starts now. Okay. How many seconds? 20 seconds. Now, you write with your right hand. Start. Already did. How much? Now, my question to Venus. What was your realization in writing both the statements? The first one and the second one. What was your realization? Okay. What else?
It gave me quite stress because to write with the left hand, I'm not used to it.
Uh-huh.
It was difficult. I was, in fact, figuring all the alphabet. I, L, O.
Yeah. So you were focusing on your writing. You're focusing on your writing. That was one realization. What else?
Speed.
It took you over 20 seconds. It took you over maybe more than 20 seconds to make that, write that statement. So that was the second realization. Anything else?
It is easy to use the regular hand.
Your regular hand. It is easy. So which means in your regular hand when you use. So what was your realization when you were writing with your regular hand, with your right hand? What was your realization then? One thing is, you are not focusing on how you are writing. You are focusing on what you are writing. Alright? So, when we are writing with our regular hand, this is one thing that we focus on what we are writing, not, hey, where my, this pen is going and all that. You are not focusing. Because, you know, you are used to write with that particular regular hand. And plus the speed is more. So you can see these two anxieties. Thank you all. Thank you, Venus, very much. Give the pen. Yeah, please. Thank you. Quality. It's definitely a very, very important point that quality is something which is seen here. So herein, this is an example of something which is purely on a physical level. A stress which you experienced on a physical level, which might have resulted from stress in your mind. But more than the mind, in this case here, it was you are trying to work upon with your fingers and how to hold first, you know, how to hold the pen with your other hand and how to move about. Whether I should go up first or like this first, you know. So you are so much focused on your, you know, biological aspect of yourself. So herein we are talking about something like this. When we are stressed out in doing something so gross, so physical, it begins with faulty eating habits. And herein it is something very, very important which we may not realize, that how a certain kind of eating habit might result in a stressful situation on a physical level in my life. Like for example, if you have eaten some heavy stuff night 11:30, you know, for me this is something uncommon, but I don't know, eating some very heavy stuff late at night, it will cause some physical stressful, you know, symptoms in your body the next morning. So herein, when we are talking about faulty eating habits, we are beginning with eating the kind of thing, the kind of food, and at a particular time. Like according to Ayurveda, it goes first into any kind of disease which you have, it first tries to find out what are your eating habits. Because 99% of the diseases, they stem out from the stomach, from not properly eating, or whatever one is eating, not properly getting digested. So therefore, it is said that when we eat, our stomach should be only half filled with food. It should be half filled with food, 1/4 should be with water, 1/4 with air. And why is it so? Why one should not, you know, totally fill the belly with, you know, stuff it with so much? Yes, you know, our stomach is like, you know, say a mixer grinder. You know, mixer grinder, if you have operated, when you put stuff in that to grind, you have to leave some space for some water and for some air. Because, you know, you stuff it up till the brim. You know, that sound comes, blade cannot even move. So this is also like a grinder, you know, if it is stuffed like that, you know, sometimes till here, sometimes going beyond the nose. And then, you know, bichara blade thing humranch. And you are stuck, you know, the blade is not moving, you are not moving, and it will just crash down like that. And then slowly, you know, it takes 15 hours for slowly that thing to settle down. What to speak of then that getting evacuated. So, when we are talking about, in regards to eating habits, we are talking about now the amount of food, first of all. Then we are talking about the kind of food, which is very important also. Like, I actually give a seminar, a total seminar on food habits. It's an entire seminar just on food habits, which is entitled, "A 2-inch tongue can kill a 6-foot man." This tongue inside, it might be just little few inches inside. But a 6-foot man can be destroyed if he cannot use this little tongue which is slithering inside properly. So therefore we see that nowadays, especially in this modern day age of Kali Yuga, there are more number of people who are dying of overeating than the number of people who are dying of undereating. Because people who are overeating getting so much diseased. So one is, of course, we talked about that, overeating. And the second is the kind of food. Now according to the Vedic scriptures and according to any healthy living, It is a vegetarian food which is recommended for we human beings because our bodies are designed for a vegetarian meal. And therefore, when the kind of food which is so high in its protein and so many other aspects, when it is dumped in our system, people think it's a myth. And you mind this, it's not just me who is saying, I'm referring to scientific journals, it's a myth that if somebody eats meat, he thinks that he is getting more healthier. You know what happens is that our stomach, it takes the maximum energy from our body to digest whatever we put in it. Our body, it has various organs and they take energy from the body in order to operate. Like when we look, when the eyes are looking at something, the eyes are taking energy. It's like a computer, you know, when the computer is on, the computer is taking energy from the battery. If I am playing a movie, then you know that particular application is taking energy from the battery to play. So similarly, if the eyes are looking at something, the eyes, they are taking energy from the body. When I am hearing or when I am moving my hands or whatever I am doing, all the limbs are taking energy from my body. So maximum energy, that system, that you know digestive system takes from our body. That is the 33% of the energy which it takes from our body. So then, and this is in regards to something which we put in the system which is easily digestible. What to speak if, you know, someone's flesh is put. Someone's flesh is put in the system, then what happens to the digestive system is, then it has to overwork. It has to overexert to try to digest that. Because it is so heavy for its digestion, it's so heavy. So what it does is, the digestive system, it then starts taking energy from all parts of the body. And specifically from the bones. It starts to leach out all the calcium from the bones. And therefore, it is observed that those who are heavily into meat eating, they have fatter bodies and weaker bones. So the bodies become fatter, but the bones inside become very, very weak because the digestive system has leached out all the calcium from the bones in order to digest that heavy stuff which is dumped in the stomach. And therefore, what happens is, most of them, they get this disease called osteoporosis. Osteo means bones, porosis means it becomes porous. So, to such an extent that heavy meat eaters, their bones become brittle. A little blow, it can, you know, break and get fractured. So, it's a myth that people think, by eating that stuff, I'll become more healthier, you know. It's like saying that if I eat Einstein's brain, I'll become brainy like him. So, if I eat someone's muscles, I'll become very muscular. And, you know, of course, I can go on and on talking about what are the other myths which are there in that kind of eating. And therefore, George Bernard Shaw, you know, he said that one of the reasons, he was a vegetarian, he said, one of the reasons why I don't eat meat, he said that I don't want my stomach to be a graveyard. So, the kind of food, and then the way it is eaten, at the time when it is eaten, all these things matter. Because it is said that, you know, there is a certain traditional way of how you begin, what kind of, according to Ayurveda, it is said that the sweet stuff is supposed to be taken first. You know, yes, I'm right, we have an Ayurvedic doctor. Why the sweet has to be taken first?
That is the heaviest
part
Buttermilk,
okay, yeah. So, because then, you know, your digestive system is already on. And first of all, you have to eat. You know when? When you are hungry. And I was, speaking on this particular point, some time ago, that in our body, there are some natural urges which we respond to, like itching. You know, you don't just sit and think, let's scratch. When it is required, then only you scratch. As a bed ke, chalo bed ke khujlate. You don't do that. So which means, just like itching, you scratch whenever, what is that? A foreign thing sits on your skin. Say, you know, some mosquito or some bacteria, virus, it sits. And immediately, even if you are asleep, your hand will go and start scratching. So which means, it is a natural urge you respond to. What else is a natural urge? Sneezing. Again, you know, you won't just sit, chinko, chalo, chikte. If I ask you, can you sneeze now? You can't sneeze now. Now, you know, you can induce yourself, you can put something in your nose, and you know. So which means, when you induce yourself, put something in the nose, there is another, some foreign element going, it's not supposed to go. You know, when the foreign element is going, then immediately the nose will reject it out. You cough out something. You know, when something goes into your throat, which is not supposed to be there, immediately you cough it out. So, over here we are seeing that we respond to these urges in a very spontaneous and natural way. You see, where nature's call. What is it? You know, it's not that you are walking on the road and you look sulabh shauchalaya. Are, chalo, sulabh shauchalaya there. You don't go to, you are not tempted, you know, when you look at sulabh shauchalaya, let's go. You will visit sulabh shauchalaya, or whether there is no sulabh shauchalaya, when there is urge. If there is no sulabh, no shauchalaya, still you will take care of it. But how many times we go eating things when we are not supposed to? We are not starving of death, we have had our meals, and then when we see, you know, a nice restaurant next to sulabh shauchalaya, you know, we will not have an urge to go to that, but we will definitely get an urge to go into that restaurant and have that, even if it is not required. So as far as eating is concerned, it is supposed to be taken when one is, the fire is really on. You know, when the fire is on, and when then you put something, then that gets properly digested. So, faulty eating habits is in terms of what you eat, when you eat, and how you eat. As it is said that many times, it is eating with your fingers is considered to be very traditional, because it activates your digestive nerve when you eat with your fingers. Many times when people are eating with so many other different appliances, it is seen that it's not very healthy for one's digestion. Of course, one's hands should be clean, because otherwise one will have, you know, some other effect of that. So, faulty eating habits, it results in a physical, stressful life. Irregular sleeping hours, again, it's on a biological level, irregular sleeping hours. And here we can see that when we go into our sleeping activity, if it is not regulated, the sleeping is not regulated, then instead of becoming nourished with that sleeping, we become lethargic. As I said, you know, sleep less, you know, become crazy, sleep more, we become lazy. Sometimes people think that if I sleep more, that will make me more refreshed when I get up. But you must have experienced that if you sleep, oversleep so much, when you get up, you feel so down, you feel so lethargic. So therefore, this is as regards to the amount of sleep. And then it is said the time of one's sleep. Now, it is said 1 hour before 12 o'clock. 12 midnight. 1 hour before 12 midnight is like 3 hours of sleeping after midnight. The quality of sleep, of just 1 hour of sleep before midnight, is 3 times better than the quality of sleep after midnight. And how many times we land up that we go to bed because of the television and all these stuff. We land up sleeping. In fact, preaching to some students in Mumbai, their day begins night 1:30, 2 o'clock. In this one college in Bombay, Chemical Engineering College, UICT, the students were telling that, why you end your program so early? And I was ending my program 10:30 at night. I said, what do you mean? Early? This is 10:30 now. He said, no, you should go on. You should begin your program this time. Because in their hostel life, 1:30 at night, the coffee wala would come. And then they would have their coffee and start playing cricket. And then they would go to sleep 4:30. And they would get up then around 10:30, 11. So can you imagine a person having that kind of schedule of sleeping? What would be that person's physicality? Just on a physical level, how much a person is just getting stressed out. So irregular sleeping hours is another cause. Unhygienic surroundings. Like sometimes we must have experienced that, say if you are manager of a company and if, you know, the cleaner, the boy, he is supposed to keep your table, the desk clean. And if you come in the morning at your desk and you see everything is just unclean, that sight itself induces you into stress. And if everything is kept neat and clean, tidy, just that sight itself will give you, will radiate so much of peace. So here we are talking about something which is on a such an elementary level that when you keep your desk clean where you are working, or your house clean, or your kitchen clean where you are working, just to keep that particular stuff, things clean, will relieve you from so much of stress. So unhygienic surroundings refers to not just unclean things around me, but also unclean association. The kind of association which I keep around me, people, we'll be discussing more on that also. That also decides what will be my physical stress. Improper breathing is another important reason. Many times, we do not even realize that we are breathing right now. And it is said that many times while speaking, or you know, many times while sleeping also, when people, they breathe through their mouth. When you inhale through your mouth, it is the most unhealthy. Because when you inhale through your nose, the system which is there through your nose, as the air goes into your system, it purifies it. But when you are inhaling, you know, through your mouth, whatever is just gone like that, it, you know, the polluted thing just goes like this, as it is. So just proper breathing, you know, sometimes you can relieve your immediate stress by just closing your eyes and just taking a deep breath. Just 3 deep breaths will help you so much in that immediate moment of your stressful life. Let's try out. Okay, sit upright all of you. Close your eyes. Keep your hands on your knees, both your hands on your knees. And when I tell you, then only you should begin. Because in this you have to focus on your breath. With your eyes closed, all of you please. Don't worry, you will be still on your chairs. Close your eyes. And as I will chant inhale, in that motion as I'm chanting inhale, you have to, with your mouth, lips shut, with your nostrils, you have to inhale, and then as you exhale, when I say exhale, you have to slowly open your lips and you have to exhale then through your mouth. So get ready. Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Inhale, exhale. Now rub your palms and massage your eyes. Now this is something which you can do anywhere. You felt something different? In fact, if you are conscious about your breathing, just being conscious about your breathing will not just help you on a very, very physical level, but will help you that you are breathing in something which is God's gift. You are breathing, we are so unconsciously taking in something which is so valuable in our life that if it is taken out from our life, even for a moment, we might die. So something which we are doing it so unconsciously, which has been given, gifted to us. So it will help us to get connected to God just by breathing. What would be more simple to get connected to God than this? Just by breathing and being conscious of this air which is going in our system, we have not created this. We didn't bring along with us when we took birth. So therefore, when we talk of improper breathing, we are talking of an unconscious lifestyle. Forget it about being unconscious of the world around us. We are so much unconscious of the things within us. You know, the very gifts which are happening within our systems, like something so simple like breathing. Yeah. Yeah, because exhaling through the mouth, why it has to be done? Yeah, because according to yoga, when the exhalation is done through the mouth, it is the carbon dioxide. What do you call that? Yeah, carbon dioxide which comes out. It's the carbon dioxide which comes out. So it has to come out through the mouth, and yeah, which means exhalation is done. Yeah, it has to be the maximum exhalation, and it has to be done with an opening which is more than the nostrils. So that is the reason. In fact, there is exhalation through the nose also, according to yoga system. In pranayama, there is. Yeah, this is just the basic pranayama which we have done. If you go into the advanced versions of pranayama, like there is Kapalabhati and then there is Bhastrika and these various kinds of pranayama, in which you have to exhale heavily through the nose. Like in this one Kapalabhati, you have to exhale just through the nose. Your lips should be shut. But that is that Kapalabhati. Kapal means the forehead. That is to purify all the contaminations from the forehead. You know, all the accumulated cough and all the other things. So when you exhale, because this is connected, when you exhale through the nose, you know, excessive fast exhalation through the nose, then that is what is taken care of. So right now we didn't want to confuse you with more advanced versions of pranayama. So this was the beginning, the most elementary one. So now we will have our short break, just to ease all of you, just so that we are still on the path of joyful stress. So there will be a break for all of you for 15 minutes. That's good enough. So we'll meet again 12:15. It's exact 12 o'clock right now. We'll meet again 12:15 right at this place. And there will be some refreshments outside for all of you. Hare Krishna. Okay, so we resume back. We were on the causes of stress and we began with the physical, the first one. And second is mental, and we are talking about stress which is caused in a more subtle way. Physical stresses, as we took that exercise of trying to write something with the other hand, and we feel a physical stress in our existence. But then there are so many situations which might not involve any physical interaction of ours, and it would directly hit upon our mind, it would directly hit upon our mental situations and mental equilibrium. So in regards to mental, we have one reason in this particular aspect is when people who are overly sentimental. Now, there is a term called having proper sentiments, and there is a term called being sentimental. So when we speak of being sentimental, over here it's connoting something negative. You know, don't be sentimental. This is, you know, like you won't find someone glorifying someone. Hey, he's a very sentimental person. You don't compliment someone by that particular attribute. But then there is another term which is called that, hey, you are full of sentiments. So when somebody is full of sentiments, that's different from somebody who is simply sentimental. So herein we are talking about someone who is having proper sentiments as against someone who is having the improper approach of those sentiments and becoming overly sentimental. So many times we see that when we land up in a situation wherein we cannot have control over our sentiments, then we land up being in a stressful situation. And that's all because of the mind again, being overly sentimental. Then another reason for somebody being mentally stressed out is this one: preset mental patterns or paradigms. Preset, that, you know, people, they have a certain preset notions. Like I was discussing this recently to a group of people, that there are certain excuses which people give not to come out of their comfort zone. What are the certain reasons they give? I have always done it my way. I have never done it your way. After all, what difference will it make if I change and do something extra or do something different? That's not my job anyways. And the last excuse people give, I don't have time. So herein, what happens is, this is a person who has his fixed track, and he never, it's like a train. You know, it has to just move on that track. It cannot take its own whatever turn. But if somebody who is on road, when somebody is driving on road, it's quite flexible. That person is more flexible than the train which is on track. So many times our mental patterns and paradigms, we make in such a way that it becomes practically impossible for us to make changes in our life and to come out of that. And many times that becomes the reason for one's stress. Because we don't realize that we are not perfect. We are not all born perfect. To err is human. And because we are not born perfect, so therefore whatever set patterns we have for ourselves is also not perfect. So therefore, this becomes an important hurdle in order to come out of the mental stressed out situation. Sometimes people, they become overly cautious. So much overly cautious that, you know, there is a medical term for this. It's called obsessive compulsive neurosis. in which a person, he goes into it's a kind of a madness. Like sometimes some people, they have a madness of just keeping things clean. And they have that kind of madness that anything they will see, they'll keep cleaning. You know, they will go 10 times and do the same thing on that same object. That's called obsessive compulsive, overly cautious. And many times you will see that people who have that syndrome in them, that they lock their homes, you know, and if they are troubled with this one, they will again go. Usko bajayenge. Then they will come out. Wapas jayenge. Itna zor se bajayenge, phir tuttega wo. Again, yeah, and overly cautious, locked their car. When they locked their car, then there is nothing wrong in being cautious. But when somebody is overly cautious, that is what we are discussing. Yeah.
If in a house there are two ladies, one is over clean and one is not, so what is the reason for that, and what should we do?
Yeah, over here, see. Therefore, you look at the words which are used. It is said overly sentimental. It is said overly cautious. We are talking about when somebody goes into extremes. When somebody goes into this extreme, that, you know, that lady is simply all the time, all through the day is having just the broomstick in the hand. And somebody who is so careless that, you know, it's stinking, it's dingy and doesn't care at all. We are not talking about these two extremes. We are talking about how to balance both these extremes. So the problem is in both. The problem is in both, you know. Were you with us since the beginning? Salt example, you heard that salt example? Okay, you just came, okay. So we already discussed about balancing. We were discussing about how to strike balance between extremes. So herein we are talking about somebody who is on the other extreme, being overly cautious. Then this is another disease which people have. Perfectionist syndrome. Yes, a person, he might be or she might be perfectionist. But not necessarily that the people who are working with you might be perfectionist. So therefore, many times there are certain situations in our life when we have to tolerate imperfections. Can I get some examples from you? There are so many situations in our life wherein we have to tolerate imperfections from the other side when we think we are perfect. Any examples from your side? Government office. Yeah, when you have to get some things done through some government office, when you have to get your whatever, license or your bill pass or your electricity bill, whatever, you know. So you experience that so many imperfections over there. Otherwise, you might not even see the face of that whatever government person. But now you have to, and not just look at the face, look at his feet. Look at his feet and beg. Karlo, and then you have to smile. And then that your very dear money you have to take out and you have to give that to that person. Sometimes under the table. So yeah, you have to tolerate the imperfections from the other side. Government office. Anything else? Marriage. Yes, we have to tolerate the imperfections of the other partner. And it is said that when a person he gets married, before it was what? Something like Chandramukhi. You know? The face of the spouse looked like Chandramukhi. And then after marriage turned into Suryamukhi. No, first is Suryamukhi. Not so soon. Or maybe nowadays immediately it turns into. And then there is Jwalamukhi. So, No, I'm just talking about faith. I'm not a male chauvinist. I'm just talking about the, you know, faith. So herein we are talking about it could be, you know, either side. Yes, definitely. And yeah, this is one example. Another example, anyone can think of? Sorry? Eating habits. Yes, a person might have a perfectionist way of eating. That he eats in a very, very systematic and clean and in a very perfectionist way. And someone else might be, you know, crude, might be brutish. I was discussing some time ago, we were discussing about that. So yeah, this perfectionist syndrome is something which one has to maybe step down. Don't think that perfectionist syndrome is something which is commendable. Yes, we might achieve something or some project, or we might have our standard that we don't step down from that standard. But then we will lose people. We will lose people in that pursuit. So many times in relationships also, in family relationships also, that families break apart because too much expectations. Another word for this perfectionist syndrome is too many expectations. So when we have too many expectations from the other person, then that results in conflict. And that results in stress. And then we have this term called perceived threat. There are certain threats which are, you know, properly judged and conceived, but there are certain threats which are simply perceived. They are not at all in reality any threatful situations, but it is perceived like that because of our attitude, because of our paradigms, because of our set patterns, mental patterns. And I'll give you an example. This happened with me. I'm based in Bombay. We have a center there in Girgaon Chowpatty. And every evening we go out for preaching programs and we come back 11:30 sometimes at night. So over there, since we are all brahmacharis staying in the ashram, so we just have a straw mat and we sleep on the floor. So this was one night, I came back from one preaching program and I had my straw mat and just spread it. And I was just about to lay down. We have a temple like bigger than this size. And I was just one corner, I was about to go to sleep. And then as I laid down, I saw that, you know, just like you have these doors and you can see some light coming from, you know, the little gap from below. So there was the light which was on in a room adjacent to the sleeping room, and there was a light which was coming through that. And I saw a big snake. This thick snake, that too, South Bombay, that concrete jungle. A big snake slithering like this. Immediately I was like shivering in fear. More than for myself, because I saw that there were so many others who were sleeping in that area. So I just wanted to shout. But I thought, let me just go and see, look at, have a look at that. So it was pitch dark. Only that light was being seen coming from below the door. So I took a flashlight, a torch, and I went. And just shivering, you know, from a distance, you know, it was slithering like this. And I put the light on that. To my foolish surprise, it was a balloon. It was just a balloon, which because of the fan, it had got cornered. And it was cornered to that door and the wall, and because of the movement of the fan, it was like this. So when I was looking, perceiving it, as I was laying on that straw mat, I was perceiving as if it's a big, thick, some python kind of thing, and it is, you know, moving, shaking, it's, you know, as snakes move. Perceived. This is again, I was totally in stress and there was no reason for me to go in stress except for this one. It is called perceived threat. So this is one real life example which I am just sharing from my side. You might be also having examples like that, wherein you perceive so many different kinds of threat, which might be more or less to degrees, which might be more intense or less intense or totally intensified. So this is again a reason why the mental state, the equilibrium is disturbed because of the perceived threats in our life, which might not be threat at all, but we perceive it as threat. Do you have any examples or are we going? Any real examples? Walking in the dark. You always have a fear that somebody will come and just like, you know, we do not perceive any threats right now because it's all lighted over here. If it becomes pitch dark, immediately, you know, you become conscious, you know, where you are sitting. Like, this is another example since you touched this particular point. That I was in one holy place, I guess it was Naimisharanya, close to Lucknow. So, over there, some place, not exactly Naimisharanya, some place close to Naimisharanya, on the walls, it was written, Jeb Katron Se Savdhan, beware of pickpocketers, like that it was written. And so many walls it was written like that. So, I was wondering that this place looks like, you know, a very remote place. Why, you know, so many different alarm signals are being put over here, warnings and all that. So the local person, he told, you know who has written all that? The pickpocketers. The pickpocketers have written that. Beware of pickpocketers. And you know why? Because they hide and observe as pilgrims pass by. They hide and observe. Anyone who sees that, aur apna jeb sambhalta hai, matlab paisa hai. Smart, huh? So the pickpocketers write that to check out, not to waste time on people who may not have anything. So quite smart, quite advanced, you know. So updated versions of pickpocketers. So they write themselves in order to create that perceived threat again. They create a perceived threat in those people who are walking around, that they somehow feel threatened by just reading that, and they try to ensure that everything is in place, and that is the reason because of which they lose. So this is another example. Huh? Anything else? That's what the seminar is all about. We are going ahead. Stay with us. So, don't worry. Mental, then environmental. Not just mental, but when we are talking about the environmental, the environment all around us. Yes, this is another reason why people go into stress. Too much heat, too much cold. It is said that by rule, man is a fool. When it is hot, wants it cool. When it is cool, wants it hot. Always wanting that which is not. So, we always are looking for situations on a very, very physical level, on the epidermis level, as we say. On the level of the epidermis, we look for situations which are cozy, comfortable. But the world, my dear friends, is not designed like that. The world is not designed to soothe our skin. The world is designed otherwise. So therefore, when we experience these extremities of the environment, too much heat and too much cold, that also becomes one of the reasons why we become stressed out. Pollution. And this is something again we are discussing, which we can say is self-induced stress. That we were not focusing on creating pollution, But because of the lifestyle which we have created for all of us, there is so much of pollution which we have created, which results without our being knowing imperceptibly, which creates stress. Like in Bombay, Bombay is called as a gas chamber, you know. Just in that heavy traffic, if you are in a heavy traffic, you have already smoked 2.5 packs of cigarettes. The carbon monoxide which has gone into your system has already made you into a smoker. That is what it is. So we are talking about what to speak then, you know, people who are taking that voluntarily and making their entire system into a chimney. Yeah, that's what, voluntarily, the active smoker. Herein we are talking about not just the passive but involuntarily, they don't want but somehow they have to commute, you know, in that particular city and take in all of that. And I saw here in Nasik also people, you know, all wrapped up, you know, look like terrorists all around. You know, sometimes I've been wondering, you know, that Nasik is supposed to be a peaceful place. What do you find all this wrapped around all over? That's for the pollution or what is it? Dust. There's a lot of dust here. Okay. So allergic to dust. So this pollution is another environmental factor which puts us in that. You must not be experiencing so much here in Nasik. Just come down to Bombay. Anyone has experienced the crowded trains of Bombay? You say no. So, you know, every day you get up in ecstasy that today, another day, I will be traveling in that wonderful train. In fact, people, they get up in the morning with that nightmarish approach which they have to do in order to, just the thought that again, I want to speak in Monday morning, I am in somewhere like Mira Road or Virar and I have to go all the way to Churchgate. You know, I was visiting one of my relatives in Mira Road. And so I thought that I will leave at night, you know, after, you know, everything is subsided. I will leave at night around 10 o'clock. So I went to the station 10 o'clock at night. 10 o'clock at night from Mira Road to Churchgate, if you know the geography of Bombay. And it was impossible for me to get a seat. So I thought I'll go tomorrow morning, early morning, because I'm used to get up 4 o'clock in the morning, so it's easy. I thought that, you know, trains begin that time, so I can easily get, you know, a nice place to sit and I'll reach just, say, in 20 and half an hour, like that. You won't believe. I was standing 4 o'clock in the morning, the train came 4:20 and I was barely having some place to stand. A 4:20 a.m. train from Mira Road to Churchgate. And then I was inquiring, this is the situation this time of the day? And they said, if you would have waited for the next one, andar bhi ghusne nahi milta tha. 4:35 or something like that, that particular time. Nowadays, the situation is, people are on the bogie. People are on the bogie, on the roof, top of the train. Even those seats are booked, you can't even go there. Those, you know, the people have already booked, you can't even go and sit up there in someone else's, whatever, that seat. That is the situation. So sometimes, just the very fact that you have to travel in a city like this puts you in stress. What to speak of when you reach, when people reach their offices, they are half dead. By the time they reach their office, they are half dead. By the time they reach at home, so they resurrect again. You know, like Jesus was resurrected after 3 days. So they try to resurrect again. It's a magic that they are half dead by the time they reach their office, full dead when they come home, and they revive back again. This is another environmental. Then familial, when we are talking about this, definitely I'll get a lot of input from your side, familiar. Lack of trust. You see, nowadays, more than love between family members, people are looking for trustworthiness, more than just love. Because you can show your love through some affectionate feelings. But in order to show your trust, you have to be really committed. You have to be honest. You have to be selfless. And of course, the translation of love nowadays is also, we can't technically call it love. It's just, the game which is played, that as long as you scratch my back, I scratch your back. You know, so that's what is going on, that, as long as both of us, we satisfy each other, yeah, we are made for each other. As long as we are satisfying each other, we are made for each other. Otherwise, you go your way, and I am already my way. So therefore, this is one of the most important reasons that people, they lack trust in their own family members. Too many expectations from other family members. When we expect too much, like, I guess this is one saying in Marathi, they say that every family wants Shivaji to be born. Neighbor's house, but not my house. Shivaji should be born, but not my house, someone else's home. So, we are expecting so many different things from our own family members. When looked into our own life, we are not up to the mark. So we are not up to the mark when we want everyone else to be up to the mark. So that is a big problem which comes in family relations. And therefore, this just spurs up the agitations and the frustrations. When, say husband and wife, the husband wants that the wife should be like Sati Savitri. the wife is asking, well then, you should be also like the husband of Sati Savitri. If you are not the husband, like, who was Satyavan? If you are not like Satyavan, why you expect me to be like Sati Savitri? So, nowadays people, they say that we want a Ram Rajya, but without Ram. We want Ram Rajya while worshipping Ravana. So while we are worshipping Ravana, how can we establish Ram Rajya? So similarly in families also, when we are dealing with family members, we have to understand, not that I be on the lowest standard and I make the other person also on the lowest standard and then we'll be happy together. No. Expecting higher standards means that we also come. Like there is this incident in the life of Mahatma Gandhi, that there was one lady who came to Mahatma Gandhi and she brought her little son and she said to Mahatma Gandhi that, kindly instruct my son, he is every day wanting to eat sweets, so many sweets he wants to eat. And Mahatma Gandhi said, you come after 2 months. She was on the father of the nation, he can't even solve this little problem. So she went away and she comes after 2 months. And then Mahatma Gandhi says to that boy, you should not eat sweets. So the mother is asking, you could have told that 2 months ago, just one statement. And he said, because I was eating sweets. So for these 2 months I practiced abstaining from sweets. And therefore now, I can say with authority, because I am practicing that. So many times what happens, we don't practice what we are preaching. So in family affairs also, you don't have to be a big preacher. You don't have to be a big speaker for that matter. Even family members, when they are trying to establish some standards in the family, we have to understand that first of all, charity begins at home. Start with us. And then we go on with the expectations from the others. Ego clashes. Srila Prabhupada, he gave a nice example in this regard. He said that in a family, when God is not made the center of the family, like there is one Christian saying, a family which prays together stays together. So when God is not put in the center, and when each family member, they think that I am the center of the family. The husband is thinking, I am the breadwinner of the family. You know, I go hard, slog hard, earn all that money, 8 hours, 10 hours, now I don't know how many hours nowadays, 12, 15, 14 hours, so many hours outside I am slogging. So I should be the center of the house. I should be the center of the family. And the wife is saying, so what? You must be bringing all the money, but who cooks the whole day, maintenance of this home and cooking and purchasing and budgeting, doing all this? I'm the one. So she thinks she's the center of the house. And the children, they are looking at both the parents. We are the future of the family. What are you talking about? We are the center of the house. So everyone is thinking, the children are thinking they are the center of the house, the wife, the husband, everyone is thinking they are the center of the house. And therefore, when there are so many centers, then there are clashes. And Prabhupada gave this example. He says that if you are sitting at a crystal clear lake, you know, a still lake, and you take a pebble and you throw in the middle of the lake, what you will see? You see concentric circles, ripples being formed. And as these ripples, they expand and they go towards the shore. Now you take 100 pebbles and you throw at the same place. You will find hundreds of ripples. But all these ripples will all be following behind each. Even if you throw hundreds of pebbles, but if you have to, you have to throw at one place. But even if you take two, not 100, and you throw at different places, what you will find? Each pebble thrown will create each of its set of ripples. And each ripple will clash with each. So that is called because of two centers. So that is called ego clashes. I am the center of the family. I am the breadwinner of the family. Wife says, I am the bread maker of the family. And of course the children, they have their own egos. And familiarity breeds contempt. Heard that? Familiarity breeds contempt. Many times we are very nice to people whom we very occasionally meet. And we are very, very brutal to those people whom we always live with. And therefore, seldom it is seen that we respect someone who is very, very close to us in regards to whatever that person might have. Some, say, discrepancies also. So familiarity, sometimes the language also which we use, the language with our near and dear ones becomes so familiar. Now, you know, there was one manager of a company, and he is telling to his secretary that, you know, the funeral expenses of my recently departed father, put it in the company's account. And the secretary is wondering, you know, his father departed and the funeral expenses he is putting in his company's account. So the secretary is asking, which account? We have so many accounts, but this expenses, you know, which account I should put? He said, packaging and forwarding. Put in packaging and forwarding account. So, again, familiarity. Because we think that, I'm in a family, so let's be, we are too familiar, and therefore that familiarity leads into stressful situations. And therefore you find what? Should I go back? Okay. I'll show both now. Sometimes each either have to what? take some sleeping pills. Like one husband, he went to the doctor, and you know, both of them, the couple went to the doctor, and the doctor gave some pills, and the doctor gave to the husband that your wife, she is not able to sleep well at night, so take these pills. So the husband is telling, when should I give it to her? No, for you, because she is not able to sleep because of your snoring and you know your whatever activity. So therefore, this is for you, so that you are peaceful and you know she is taken care of. So here in we are talking about in families when things are friction and estranged. So now we come to work related. What are the stressful reasons and situations in relation to our work? Urgency addiction. That many times we land up into urgency addiction, and urgency addictions are such that we don't realize that when we have got into or when we have become addicted to this particular disease or syndrome and how to come out of it. Because one of the reasons why people they get into this urgency addiction is that they are not able to prioritize their things in their life. Like you must have heard about these quadrants in a person's work. You heard about that quadrant? What are those quadrants? Important, urgent. Not so important, not so urgent. Then, important but not urgent. You know, these situations. So let's take one. That there are certain priorities. Something might be very important but might not be urgent at all. Like what? A seminar like this. It might not be an urgency, but it is very important. A seminar like this, many times people, they consider that if this is not urgent, I can do it any time. Why? Like there is a story of one sweeper who was every day sweeping in front of Lord Jagannath's temple in Puri. You know Jagannath Puri? Jagannath's temple. So he was a sweeper. And pilgrims would come from far distant places and they would be looking at the sweeper and you know just congratulating that you are so fortunate, you are here every day. We just get time to come once a year for the Rath Yatra of Lord Jagannath. And they would be asking, so you take darshan every day? He said, any time I can go. I am here only, any time I can go. And he never went. Thinking, any time I can go. And he died. Just outside. Never ever went inside and had darshan. And there were people from distant places would come and have darshan and go. So sometimes we see that because of taking things which are very important very lightly. So here is the example of things which we take. We know that it is important, but we consider, somebody should close this. We consider it as just something which is not urgent. Then, let's take the vice versa. Some things which are very urgent, but not at all important. A phone call. Sometimes sitting in a seminar like this, the phone rings. Phone vibrated. Hey, phone. Teen bar baja. So then, you get up, go out, and then you find out it was a person whom you never wanted to talk to. Or maybe just a, you know, some from the networking company. So we are coming out with a new scheme, a prepaid, postpaid. Would you like to? So you left maybe a room like this, thinking that it's an urgent call. But then you found out that it was the least important. So this is another example of urgent, but not important. But then there are things which are important as well as urgent in our life. Any examples for that? Reaching the office in time. Yes. Reaching the office in time. Many times we are very, very conscious of leaving the office in time. Especially if it is a government office. Before time. But when it comes to reaching it before time, hardly that is taking place. So yes, reaching office in time or whatever else we do punctually is something very important, and as well as it is urgent. So here in urgency addiction is one reason why people in their work area, they become stressed out. Interpersonal conflicts. People who are working in the same department, the same company, the same firm, the same business, there are interpersonal conflicts. And many times the interpersonal conflicts might have no connection with the project which they are into. It might be just because of the person, it might be just person based, but might not be issue based. You know, there is issue based conflict and there is person based conflict. So many times people who have some envy and, you know, some dissension with someone on a personal ground, and that is shown because of someone who is working in a certain field, in a certain area. So interpersonal conflicts. Then multitasking. Many times we try to do such multitasking, so many tasks we take, like, you know, trying to juggle so many things at a time in our work life. And if we are not seasoned to do those, then what happens is that we break our loose and we break our temper, and so many things then starts happening. So this is called multitasking. Unrealistic targets. Now in unrealistic targets, we can have so many examples in regards to when we are taking up a certain project just for name and fame, that I can handle it. And we think that we can handle that particular thing very nicely. But because we have taken upon ourselves a very unrealistic project, and because of the ego, we don't want to step down. So we simply eat ourselves inside, and the stress. So therefore, we have to be very careful at our workplace whether I am targeting it the right way, whether it is realistic or what or not. Like for example, if somebody, you know, not just at the work but anywhere else, if somebody wants to lose weight, if he wants to lose weight, he has to have some realistic targets. He can't just think that, you know, in 1 week's time, I should lose 10 kg. Or maybe in 1 month's time, I should lose 25, 30 kg. So therefore, when we are talking about targets in our life, we have to set them in such a way that we are, you know, healthy enough to handle them. Then unhealthy competition in work areas. There is no problem in having healthy competition. But when the competition comes into being very, very unhealthy, then that results again in a stressful situation. So, we are talking about when people, they want to compete with their own fellow people, the colleagues. And they want to compete in such a way that not that they want to run the race along with them. They want to run the race of that competition by stepping over them. So many times we want to win the race by stepping over the fellow runner who is along with us. But the real victory, like this was one particular incident reported of, there was a race which was organized for the handicapped and the mental retarded, you know, persons. And as the race began, one little girl, she tripped and she fell. And all the other runners in all the tracks, They looked back at her, that she tripped and she fell. So they stopped. Everyone went to that girl. And then one of the senior ladies, she was also mentally retarded and handicapped, she just, patted her, gave her a little kiss, and she said, this will, feel you good. And then everyone held hands, and everyone came together to the finishing line, and the entire stadium was, they stood up, a round of applause, a waving ovation, standing ovation for almost 10 minutes. So, many times we land up in a competitive world to such a degree that we don't even realize that whom are we competing with? First of all, are we competing with someone who is worthy of that competition? Or are we competing for what reason, for what sake, to accomplish what? That is also another important issue which we have to look into. Overexertion. That we think that unless I overexert, I will not achieve what I want to achieve. But then if you remember that one slide which we discussed, trying to balance the need of our study, work, social obligations and all that, at the end of the day, what do we want? Happiness, satisfaction and enjoyment. That is what we want at the end of the day. So if because of overexertion, I am not getting that at the end of the day, what is the use of all that exertion? Therefore, nowadays you find that a man who is working in the corporate sector in places like Bombay, I have met with people, they leave their home 6 o'clock in the morning and they come back 9, 10 o'clock. And by the time they come back, they only hit the bed. And when they hit the bed, they just get up again to hit the road. Hitting the road, hitting the bed. Hitting the road, hitting the bed. That's what the life has become. So, earlier, we used to say, don't work like an ass. Heard that? Now, if you say, don't work like a donkey, it's an insult to the donkey. Because, if in the donkey community, if you would go and overhear what the donkeys are talking about, they are, hey, don't work like a man, Just see how he's slogging hard. They will be giving our examples. So, many times people, they overexert so much thinking that this overexertion will give them whatever they want. This is a story of one woodcutter from a remote village of a country. And his life was that every day he would go. Early in the morning he would leave his little hut with his axe and he would cut some wood till noon. Till noon he would cut some wood, then he would have his lunch and then he would take rest in the forest, and in the evening he would bring back that cut wood. That was his life. So one city dweller met him and examined his life, his lifestyle, and said that what an unproductive person you are. He said, why? What do you mean? He said that you early in the morning you leave and half of the day you just sleep. He said that what should I do? He said, noon, you cut your wood till noon, that's fine. And then you take your lunch, you can just take a little nap and then you can cut so much wood in the afternoon. From 3 to 6 o'clock, you can cut so much wood more. And he said, why? What will I do with that much wood? Yeah. What will you do? You can sell that more wood, you can get more money. Then with that more money, you can buy just not this axe, but electric woodcutter machine. And then, with that, then you can cut so much wood all through the day. You can start a wood business. And then you can employ other woodcutters to cut for you. You don't have to cut them. He said, then what will I do? Then you can relax. He said, thank you for your nice advice. I am already doing that. That if I have to do that anyway, why I have to go through all of this rigmarole which you are talking about? I am already doing that. Thank you. So, many times we think that simply over-exerting, more than like a donkey, will fetch me more. But at the end of the day, we are losing for which, for whom are we working? We are losing the very purpose of our life. That's the important question. Then we say that we are trying to balance like this particular little ant. Trying to balance the impossible. Does this look like a possible feat that somebody can achieve? So our life also becomes that we somehow try to hold on to, like this ant who's trying to hold on to the pressures, and the pressures could be each biscuit, each layer of the biscuit you can compare to work pressure, family pressure, social pressure, health pressure, you know, the economical pressure, and you know, the pressure of my senses and what all, my aspirations, my greed, my cravings, my ambitions, my hopes, everything loaded on us, and like that, and we are inching, thinking that we are progressing in life. It is said that, you know, it is these kind of pressures which is induced in our life. It's like a person who is tied to a truck. A person is tied to the truck and the truck is moving at great speed. So the truck is moving at great speed. So because he is tied, he is being dragged at that speed of the truck. And the truck is, you know, Indian roads, the truck is going so many potholes up and down and all this. And because of that, the man who is tied is also going up and down. Now the man thinks, if I want to stop all of this which is happening with me, I should stop the truck. And what he does? He tries to pull the rope. What he has to do in order to stop his being dragged? Just cut the rope. He has to just cut the rope. So many times in our life also, the stressful situations are like this big truck. And we are like the victims being dragged. But the thing which is hooking us to that is that attachment, that rope. And we think that pulling on to that rope, pulling on, holding on to that attachment, I'll make the truck stop. Which is a crazy idea. We have to cut our attachment. When we cut our attachment to so many things of this world, we'll find that we'll land up so peaceful. We'll land up so peaceful in our life. And therefore, we have to not try to balance the impossible, but we have to transcend the impossible. That is the rule of the game. And therefore, when we look into the human function graph, how a person who is attached or becoming a victim of stress, how the human function graph works. It works from that we adapt to certain situations in our life. Like for example, the environment around us, we start adapting to that. Like India is a tropical country, so we start adapting to the tropical climate. We make our houses like that. We keep our surroundings like that. So many things are, like in London, over there, the cars, they do not have any heaters inside. Oh, sorry, ACs inside. There's only heaters inside. So recently, it's becoming so hot, you know, in the summer, there in London, that they are having problems because they have fashioned their cars like that. That there are no ACs inside. So, you know, we adapt to our surroundings. We make our surroundings in such a way that And according to the surroundings, we try to live the adaptation method. But then we have to also deal with the breakdowns in our life. So many times our graph grows from adaptation to breakdown. And herein, if we look into our human graph, it is in three stages. We have the performance which we have to put forth in order to, they say, to survive. Papi, pet ka sawal and all that. So we have to keep up in order to just perform. And in order to perform well, you know, to get all the assessments, the yearly assessments, we have our deadlines, meeting deadlines. And what does that mean, meeting deadlines? You know, the word itself is something very symbolic. Unless you are dead in order to meet that particular line, finishing line, you have to be almost dead to meet the finishing line. So meeting deadlines, and in that what happens is it begins with exhaustion. We become totally exhausted in trying to meet the peak performance, meeting with deadlines, which results in ill health and ultimately breakdown. Which means, this word itself, it gives the meaning, break down. We break ourselves and then we are totally down, flat. So this is the human function graph which grows from adaptation to breakdown, and how we can see some facts, revealing facts in India in regards to this particular stress problem. One in five children have stress-related emotional disorders. 32% of urban teens have alcohol and 25% smoke. 40% teenagers admit to severe anxiety. Cardiologist Brian Pinto of Nanavati Hospital, Mumbai says 20% increase in teenage patients with hypertension in the past 5 years, and all this is related to their stressful life. In a recent study by IAP, 75% adolescents said they could not communicate comfortably with their parents, and this is an organization geared towards, you know, the parenting. Then the age of the first sexual intercourse has dropped from early 20s to 16 to 18. It's an alarming figure, and it's all because of the media, the hedonistic lifestyle which the teenagers are all into. And if this is what is happening to them, what to speak of the elders. Herein we have for them the statistics. Mentally stressed out workers are costing British industries £3 billion a year. And this is from the medical health report. Herein we have from America. Californian employees shell out $1 billion a year for medical and legal fees resulting from mental stress. 50% of all cardiac arrests are just related to stress. 1,000 Americans murdered at workplace last year due to mentally stressed out and disgruntled employees. 1 million workers in America are absent on an average work day because of stress-related complaints. The question is, do we want to become another statistics for someone else to quote? Or do we want to be part of the solution? It is said, if we are not part of the solution, we are part of the problem. There is no gray area in between. Either we are part of the solution or we become part of the problem. Now the effects of stress. When we are talking about the effects of stress, we can see the effects of that on a physical level. We can see the effects of stress on mental level, and we can see the effects of stress in our behavioral. So these are the three different outlets for the stress. When the stress is totally inside, bottling up, so it releases itself through physical, mental and behavioral. So the physical, in regards to physical, these are the physical symptoms which are seen. In a person who is stressed out, heart diseases, constant fatigue, stiff neck, backache, ulcers, diarrhea, indigestion, migraine, etc. It doesn't stop there. Because we could only fit in this slide the prominent ones. So there are so many others which are related to just the physicality of someone when he is affected by one's stress. And of course, definitely these particular symptoms might have other reasons also, but nowadays maximum patients with these kind of diseases, when they are reported, when they trace back the problem, it is either because of work related, family, environment and all those reasons of stress. Then we have the mental stress, the effects of that. Lack of concentration, this is very, very significant and a very common problem which people, they come to us also, not just to the medical expert, they come to us also that we lack concentration, we can't even concentrate for even 2 minutes on something nowadays. Forget about having some kind of spiritual concentration or meditation. We can't even concentrate in our studies, which is very much required. Sometimes they think spirituality is optional, but this is something which is very much necessary. But even in that, we can't have the concentration. Forgetfulness, confusion, indecisiveness, panic attacks. Does this sound familiar, that it happens to more or less degree in our life when we are affected mentally because of the stress? Then behavioral, the effects of stress on a behavioral level, restlessness, irritable, rage, addiction to smoking and drinking, even it comes to suicidal tendencies. And sometimes a person, he doesn't want to behave like this. He doesn't want to be irritable. But because a person who is working at home, working in the office, he is working in the office and he is so much stressed out there that when he comes home, the only person he can release his stress on is the family members at home. And then they think that, you know, why this person comes home? You know, we are more peaceful when he is not at home. Like, one husband, he came running middle of the day. He came running at home. And the wife is asking, hey, this is just 2 o'clock. How come you are at home so soon? And he said, you know, I did some blunder in the office and my boss shouted at me. He told me, go to hell. So I followed him. He said, go to hell. I said, okay. So I came. You won't believe, I have seen, there was a counselee of mine in Bombay, and this, he was a student, and his phone rang. So, you know, we were both traveling and he was like dozing off, so his phone rang. So I looked into, you know, they have the caller ID, who is calling. So it had the number and the name, you know, in the place of the name, it said, hell. I said, hey, who is calling you from hell? You know, the number. So I woke him up and then I said that the phone is ringing and he talked for a while. And I said, hey, who was it? He said, from my home. I said, that's what you have given the name? He had named it, you know, hell. So, it happens. Our behavior, in our behavior, it all comes out. And, you know, again, we might not be behaving otherwise with our family members or anyone like that, taken any other situation. But because of the stress somewhere else, it is vented out somewhere else. So that is what over here, the effects of stress on a behavioral way. And therefore, you must have heard this poem in your childhood. What is this life if full of care? We have no time to stand and stare, no time to stand beneath the boughs and stare as long as sheep and cows. You remember this poem? William Wordsworth. I think it was the Daffodils. Huh? You remember? Or it was just for me? You have also? It was Daffodils, I guess. So, you know, in our childhood, we mugged up this particular, I remember mugging up this poem and, you know, during the viva, the oral test, you know, just vomit it out. What is this life full of care and all that, you know, repeat it like that. And no time to think about that particular poem which has such deep meaning. So our life also becomes like this. Sometimes nice to recite a poem. Very nice to recite a poem of that kind of, you know, rhyming words. You know, like care and stare, bows and cows. Nice rhyming poem. But our life becomes not so rhyming as this poem, as the meaning is so deeper and shakes us up. So therefore, sometimes it becomes like this. Too much to do, but too little time. I need more time. One of my colleagues, he would tell me that only if God made 26 hours, I can do so much if I had 26 hours in a day. I need more time. 24 hours are too less. Then, want to enjoy my life to the max, I'm always running around. I'm stressed out. Give me a break, or else I'll break. No balance between my personal and my work life. I'm bored. Sometimes our imbalanced work and family life is like, you know, imagine you're trying to drive a vehicle which has a scooter tire on this side and a tractor tire on this side. Imagine trying to drive a vehicle with that. So, we are trying to balance both stressful situations. When we come home, it is another kind of flavored stress. And when we leave home, then just leaving home, being out on the street, on the road, there is another kind of the traffic jam and everything. That's another kind of, you know, stressful situation. And reaching office is, well, that's another story. So, herein, let's go into some paradoxes of life. So herein we have this wonderful composition which I found out. The paradox of our time and history is that we have taller buildings but shorter tempers. The tempers are very short while the buildings are very tall. And it's something, a good combination. A person with short temper living in a tall building, good combination. Because then, if he wants to commit suicide, the tall building will help him out. So, it's a good combination, I guess, you know, short tempers and tall buildings. We have wider freeways, but narrower viewpoints. Our viewpoints have become so narrow. We have, we spend more, but have less. In terms of satisfaction. We buy more, but we enjoy less. Here we are talking about the paradoxes of our lives. We try to get something, but we get the opposite of that. Let's go ahead. We have bigger houses, but smaller families. The families are going into, breaking into being smaller and smaller and smaller. What they call them? Nuclear. They call them nuclear family. Atomic families also have come. Subatomic families. It will come. Go further, breaking into. So, of course, we are talking about families in India. If you go to the West, talking about families was an age-old thing. You're talking about families. Families means people living together. That's what you're talking about. You know, over there, at one point of time, the divorce rate was 71% divorce within 3 years of marriage. in America. Now the divorce rate has gone down because nobody marries. They call that live-in relationship. Just we live together. And sometimes, you know, when a couple is seen, and if they are going somewhere, say in a restaurant or a hotel to stay in, and they say, so you and your wife? No, me and my partner. And sometimes they might be living together for so many years, having 3-4 kids, and then they decide, let's get married now. It's high time, we have 4 kids already. There was one cartoon which was shown to me when I was there in New York. And in this cartoon, they showed the husband is there and the wife is there and some kids are playing. So the husband is telling to the wife, honey, what a wonderful sight is this. My children and your children are playing with our children. So this is the situation of what family would call that. So herein at least we are talking about broken families. At least there is some kind of family. At least the name itself is still, you know, being held, the family. So we are talking about bigger houses, smaller families, more conveniences, less time. Some of these big houses in these big cities you will find, there are so many conveniences, so many ultra amenities at home. You know, the home theater, the what all, you know, the flat TV, the DVD player, the AC and so many things. And you know who enjoys all that all through the year or all through the day? The dog. The dog at home enjoys nice AC, you know, if he understands. And the home theater and everything. And the man who is owning all that is working outside like a dog. So this is the situation. So we may buy in so many conveniences, but how much time? I'm talking about this one person I met. Morning 6 o'clock he leaves, 10 o'clock, and the only thing he can enjoy is the bed at home. He has like, you know, a 3000 square feet huge house, and the only thing he knows very well is the bed where he goes, just crashes down when he comes back. That is the only place he can enjoy. Then we have more degrees, but less sense. Doesn't mean that having more degrees will give us more sense. Like, you know, one time there was one logician. You have heard what a logician is all about? A logician is a person who always puts logic in anything he sees. Logic and reasoning. So he is looking at, you know, this whiteboard and the stand. He will try to use his logic that why this stand is tripod. Why it is so high? He put his logic. That is a logician. So this logician, he went to one remote village of India. And over there he saw that, you know, there was, for him it was a strange sight, but it was a common sight in any village of India, that there was a farmer who was working in the fields, and at a distance there was a pole to which a bull was stringed. A bull was yoked to the pole, and the bull was going round the pole, and there were some spices which were getting ground because of the moving of the bull. Have you seen that? In, you know, villages they do that. They tie the bull to that pole and the bull goes round and, you know, it keeps grinding so many things. So the logician is looking at that. What is this happening? What is the logic behind this? So he looks at the farmer. The farmer at a distance is working and this bull is going round the pole. So he calls the farmer and he asks, what is this happening? So the farmer is looking, you look like some educated person, you can't realize what's happening. You know, this bull is going around the pole and is grinding the atta for me. While I am working there, the atta, fresh atta is getting ground here. And when I come back, I can make my rotis, fresh rotis, and I can have my lunch. What's so difficult? See, You tell me, how do you know when you are there, you know, say half a kilometer away from this place, how do you know that this bull is going around? And the farmer said, see, I have tied the bells. So when I might be half a kilometer away, but I am hearing those bells. So I come to know that the bull is going. The bell is ringing, ding, 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 and the bull is gone. I come to know. Ah, the logician said, this is where you uneducated people, you will never realize your mistake and your folly. What if the bull stands at one place and is like, does like this? The sound will come and you will think the bull is going around the pole, but the bull is making a fool of you. What if the bull is standing at one place and just shaking its neck like that? And the farmer said, the bull will never do that because it is not a logician like you. Only if the bull would have been, or if I would have tied that bell to your neck and tied you to that pole. He said, you would have done that, but the bull will not do. So many times, we may think that we have so many degrees after my name. And I'll tell you that, you know, some of the greatest, you know, brains have done the greatest follies. NASA. Heard of NASA? NASA, in their whatever said moon expedition. So, you know, they were all working upon something called creating a zero gravity pen. Because they wanted that if we want to write something up there on the lunar surface where there is no gravity, so we have to create anti-gravity pen, you know, which will help the ink to flow down. You won't believe they spent 10 years. They spent 10 years in an entire crew to make that kind of pen, anti-gravity pen, which costed them, one pen costed them $12 billion. And the Russians used a pencil. So, sometimes somebody might come out with some invention like that, that, you know, I have invented something which is the result of, you know, so many degrees behind my name. But as we see here, we may have more degrees, but less sense, more knowledge, but less judgment, more experts, less solutions, more medicine, but less wellness. Like, there was one doctor, and this doctor, he, you know, prescribed some medicine to a certain patient, and then the doctor is calling the patient, hey, you gave me that check the other day when you visited me, my visiting fees. Your check bounced back. And the patient said, your disease also bounced back. You know, for the disease which you had diagnosed me and given me the medicine, that also bounced back. So better my check also keeps bouncing as your, you know, my disease keeps bouncing on me back. You know, I was reading, you know, some depth definitions about, you know, certain professionals. And about a nurse, it was said, definition of a nurse. Said the definition of a nurse is that she wakes you up to give you a sleeping pill. So many times we may have so many medicines, but when we talk about wellness, where is it seen? We have multiplied our possessions, but reduced our values. We talk too much, love too seldom, hate too often. We have learnt how to make a living but not a life. We have added years to life, not life to years. People, they want to increase the length of their life. So I was discussing recently that there is no control which we can have at the length of our life. Length means how long you live. But we can at least have control over what should be the depth of my life, the depth and breadth of my life. Then we have been all the way to the moon, but trouble have crossing the street to meet the new neighbor. So this is the situation. In fact, in a city like Bombay, sometimes the neighbors, you don't even know whether some human beings stay next to you. And you know when they come to know? When they die. And there have been cases where some old couple or some just one of the couple, just a husband or wife, old staying, and the poor guy died 3 days ago, nobody came to know until the neighbor, they smelt the stench of the dead body. There have been cases like that. Then they came to know that there was someone staying here who left his body some days ago. So these are the situations wherein we are living. We have conquered the outer space, but what about the inner space within? We have split the atom. What about the prejudice? We have higher incomes, lower morals. We have become long on quantity, but short on quality. These are the times of tall men and short characters, steep profit, shallow relationships. These are the times of more leisure, less fun, more kinds of food, less nutrition. Fast food, slow digestion, two incomes, more divorce, fancier homes, fancier houses, broken homes. And therefore, it is a time when there is much in the show window and nothing in the stock room. You know, the shops have, you know, window shopping they call it. So, in the show window there is so much, but when you go and inquire, do you have this stuff? There is nothing in the stock room. So the externals are so much being given importance, but the internals is something which is not only neglected, but laughed upon nowadays. And therefore, the materialistic equation is this. People are used, whereas objects are loved. What it should be actually? The equation should be that objects are supposed to be used, wherein people are supposed to be loved. In fact, there was a case recently in Bombay, wherein the son killed his father, because the father stopped his cell phone, using of his cell phone. He killed his father. Which means, see, this equation, loving so many objects, and therefore, people are treated like just some trash in a trash can. And therefore, these are the paradoxes, if we conclude into, we have better transportation, better technology, better gadgets, better communications, comforts, better time management techniques. Why then are we so busy? If everything is better from, you know, the primitive times, we have everything which are, you know, they call it the time-saving devices. We have time-saving devices. What are the time-saving devices we have, which we use? Cars, airplanes, washing machines. What is?
Blender, mixer.
Mixer. Blender. What else? Cell phone. We have so many time-saving devices. Still we find that a person nowadays, he is seen more busy. If we compare our life to someone or our ancestors, say some 40 years ago, just take 40, 50 years ago, you know, those our ancestors were having a more relaxed and peaceful life than we with all of these time-saving devices. So therefore, the question should be asked that what kind of a life am I leading? So this is what the mind's x-ray would be. You know, if you would take the x-ray of the mind of a stressed out person, it would look something like this. Like, wrong education. Not because of education, but because of wrong education. And also we could say, because of not giving good education. So it could not, it would be that, yes, it's not that, you know, the educational systems are teaching wrong things. But not teaching them the right thing is also, If you do not teach the right thing to the child will pick up the wrong. Because he has to pick up something, so he'll pick up the wrong. If you do not inculcate the right habit in oneself and maybe someone else who is dependent on us, then the wrong thing comes up. So this is the X-ray of a stressed out mind. And I call it the cancerous mind. It's like a tumor. Now what is the nature of a tumor, a cancerous tumor? It spreads. Cancerous tumor, it spreads. And it spreads very rapidly. Very rapidly. So our mind, it becomes like a cancerous, tumorous mind. And how it spreads? What are the various reasons for this mind? Because now, for up until this point of time, we are just going more deeper into the disease. We have not come to the prescription. So herein, we'll be taking a break for our lunch now, it's 1:45, because I'll be discussing on this particular topic after our lunch, which is a very, very important aspect of trying to locate our disease. Where the disease stems from, we have now reached the mind. With our lifestyle, from the gross level, we have, you know, like a spiral roll, we have reached to the epicenter of the problem. You know, like there is the epicenter of the earthquake or the volcano. We have reached the epicenter, that is the mind. And it's not just a simple innocent mind. We are talking about a mind which is cancerous in nature. So what are the causes for the cancerous mind? We shall be discussing in our session after lunch. So right now, we'll take a break for lunch. And I guess we'll have an hour's break. So we'll meet again 2:45. After our lunch session, the post-lunch sessions, we'll have more activities so that, I know, after, you know, already been so long and, you know, after the lunch, you know, the train is sometimes overfueled and goes like passenger train. So, we'll have more activities and just stay with us. We'll be having a very wonderful skit, a drama based on the theme which we are having. So our players are just, you know, practicing right now for all of you. So hope you'll have a nice, relishable, palatable lunch. What you all can do, if it's hot outside, you can fill your plates and you can come inside and eat here. We can switch on the fans if you want. And you can have your meals here. We'll play some soft music also for you. And we'll meet after lunch. Hopefully we'll have the same people again. Huh?